Hey there, are you ready to build a fitness business that becomes a true income-producing asset? Then I welcome you to the Fitness Business Freedom Show, brought to you by Fitness Revolution. I am your host, Justin Hanover, and we have over 15 years of experience building thriving fitness businesses, and we are committed to sharing our knowledge and expertise with you. You can expect to hear proven business foundations and frameworks, success stories from our coaching partners, and guest experts to give you straight answers for your biggest questions. Doesn't matter if you have an online business, fitness facility, or operate as an independent trainer, you are in the right place to grow your business and create the personal freedom you desire. Welcome to today's episode. I'm your host, Justin Hanover, success coach with Fitness Revolution. Before we dive in and bring on today's guest, I just wanted to share a little background on who I have joining me and what you can expect to hear. So, today I have the pleasure of speaking with Nick Winkleman. Nick is the head of athletic performance and science for the Irish Rugby Football Union. His primary role is to oversee the delivery and development of strength and conditioning and sports science across all national and provincial teams. Prior to working with Irish Rugby, Nick was the director of education and training systems for Exos. Nick completed his PhD with dissertation focus on motor skill learning and sprinting. Nick is an internationally recognized speaker on human performance and coaching science and has multiple peer-reviewed publications and book chapters alongside his own book, The Language of Coaching, The Art and Science of Teaching Movement. So that's a little background on who Nick is and what he's gone through. Now, within this conversation, the first thing I just want to point out is like we've all had those coaches that just knew how to get the best out of us. It was like something about them that just unlocked a different way of thinking and brought higher levels of performance. Like it was truly amazing. And vice versa, we've experienced the opposite of that in coaches, and we know what that's about. But I want to ask you, like, how do you think it would affect your business if you fully understood how to apply that consistently to your team and your clients? It would obviously have a massive effect on your business. And that is exactly what Nick dives into within our conversation. You will end this podcast episode understanding the power you have when you utilize the language of coaching. So, on that note, let's go ahead and get this conversation started and bring Nick on. Today's episode is brought to you by Fitness Revolution. So you started your fitness business and been in the game now for a few years. You might have even seen some good growth over those years, but now you feel stuck. You feel like the momentum you once had just isn't there, and you don't know how to get it back. Should you be focusing on your marketing, your sales, or your team? What is the next bottleneck to focus on that will allow you to break the chains holding you back? That's a great question. And one of the biggest skills as an owner is to be able to understand and identify the next biggest issue to keep your business moving. And that's exactly why Fitness Revolution has created our proprietary needs assessment to allow you to quickly see where your business stacks up and receive immediate feedback on what to focus on next. It's a quick 10-question assessment that will allow you to be able to provide valuable feedback to get past sticking points and hit your next goal. Whether you are currently stuck or frustrated with the progress that you're experiencing or just want to dial in what's currently working, this assessment is the first step to making that happen. I invite you to head over to the show notes where a direct link to the needs assessment will be so you can easily access it there. Now let's jump into today's show. Nick, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to spend it with us and sharing your journey and your insights.
Justin, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. So let's start with giving our listeners some background context before we dive into our conversation and kind of like that 1,000-foot overview of how you became the Nick that we're speaking with today.
That 1,000-foot overview keeps getting longer and longer. So we'll see if we can navigate our way through a short version. So I've been a strength conditioning coach now for pretty close to 20 years. I knew I wanted to be in this industry in some form or fashion since I was 15. My first job was working in a gym. And so I really have been a lifelong both student and now we can consider teacher within the space of human performance. And so I like to think of my journey kind of being on chapter two So chapter one as a professional took place at a place called Exos, formerly known as Athletes Performance, located in Phoenix, Arizona, where I worked. And within that location, to keep it short, it's the home away from home for professional high performance athletes. And so my little piece of that pie was working with NFL athletes and NFL hopefuls, notably preparing for the NFL Combine. And so 7 out of the 10 years I was there, I oversaw that program, helping players prepare for their 40-yard dash, their agility, their broad jump, all their strength and power, the physical and the mental side of, as they say, the biggest interview of an NFL player's life, as well as helping physically prepare them for their rookie season. And so think of that kind of as my canvas for which a lot of my experience was laid down. At the same time, I was a coach educator. So when I wasn't coaching, I oversaw the Exos education department, took me all around the world running these mentorship programs. And so the reason that's relevant is I always was working on developing myself as a coach, but as a coach educator, it afforded me the opportunity to think about coaching and think about the act of coaching quite a bit, which likely will become relevant as we progress into this podcast. Now, chapter two, most recently, I moved to Dublin, Ireland with my family as of 2016. And now I'm the head of athletic performance and science for the Irish Rugby Football Union. And so that allows me to work across our 4 professional rugby teams, as well as all of our national teams. And so it's a bit more of a leadership role, but still I'm coaching week in, week out. So that coach educator and coach piece are still in play. Now, the red thread throughout all of that is this deep, healthy obsession with the act and art of coaching. Quite specifically, I am passionate. It wakes me up in the morning and keeps me up at night in this intersection between what we as coaches say and how that impacts the learning and performance journey of our athletes, our clients, and our patients. It brought me through a PhD to my wife's support and dismay. It inevitably gave rise to my recent book, The Language of Coaching, and is likely the reason I'm afforded the opportunity to come on great podcasts like this.
Amazing. I mean, you can definitely tell just the way you talk, the passion that you have in what you do and the way you describe everything. And I'm just a little curious, and you can shed some light on it, is like, I think it's interesting for people to hear kind of how opportunities came about and presenting themselves. So maybe you can touch on a little real quick, like how you got involved with Exos in the beginning and having that opportunity to work with NFL Combine. And then how did that branch to obviously where you are now in Ireland?
Okay. So we're gonna run out of time. So I'm gonna try again. I'll try to give you the shortcut version of this one. So I met a gentleman named Guido van Rijsigem, who's originally from Belgium and basically a self-taught physio ATC strength coach now working in the United States. Just unbelievable. And I found him in the back room at the Oregon State University Rec Center, where I was becoming a personal trainer, just an in-house certification while I was getting my exercise science degree. And so he took me under his wing. And one day after I had proved my commitment to his tutelage, he pulled out this little pamphlet. And this pamphlet had this scary looking guy with a flat top that our industry now knows as Mark Verstegen, the founder and owner of Athletes Performance, now Exos. And he told me, he's like, Nick, if you want to be the best and work with the best in high performance, this is the guy, Mark Verstegen, and this is the place, Athletes Performance, you need to work at. They are leading the way. They're ahead of their time. And it turned out, just to fast forward, that they absolutely were and still are. Industry has caught up, but they have very much so been the leader in the high performance kind of integrated training methodology space. And so I think, Justin, when he told me that, I was either 19 or 20. It was my second year in college. And at that point, I said, okay, job done. I'm going to do everything I can to prepare myself to get a job at this place. So finished up the in-house certification, became a trainer, did internships in professional baseball, collegiate baseball, all kind of sponsored and supported by this mentor, Guido. Read every book I could, did an undergrad research project, not because I had to, but because I wanted to, and built up this portfolio all the while, 3 out of my 4 years working as a personal trainer, getting invaluable experience, learning how to communicate and program at a very diverse individual level. Now, I literally, Justin, I haven't been asked this specific question. So I cold called Athlete's Performance. So I flew to Phoenix, Arizona. There was no phone number. I couldn't make an appointment with Mark Verstegen. And so I flew to Phoenix, Arizona. I was visiting ASU, looking at a possible master's program there. There was no guarantee or even knowledge around an internship program, right? The internet wasn't nearly what it was today. And I walk up and I say, listen, I'm a friend of Guido, so-and-so of Mark Verstegen. They had known each other in their time in Florida. And I said, listen, I'd love to be able to drop off my portfolio and see if there's an opportunity to apply for an internship. I'm finishing up schooling this year, so on and so forth. And so a wonderful gal who I came to know very well, who worked at the front desk, gave me a tour. I was literally walking by the future of, you know, one of them, Luke, became an NFL strength coach, won a Super Bowl. The other one went on to work for the Raiders. The other one went on and was the head strength coach for the Raiders. And so I'm walking by an all-star list of strength coaches that I didn't even know yet. And I remember I walked out. I said, oh my goodness, this place was better than I expected. I get home and a month later, I get an email. And the email is inviting me to do an internship at Athlete's Performance in the summer of 2006. I literally broke down in tears because when I say I had spent 3 years preparing to get that email, I literally mean, Justin, I had committed every day of my life, academically and outside of it, to prepare to get that opportunity. And so I got that opportunity. I learned a lot during that internship in 2006. I wasn't really liked at the beginning, to be honest with you.
Really?
I was overzealous. I was overeager. And I'm sure a lot of people out there, I know you have business owners, work with young interns and strength coaches who sometimes get mistaken for being cocky and overconfident when it's just a desire and passion that they have. And so I learned to tame that. I rapidly iterated myself, which was difficult to do, but inevitably by the end, I turned it around. So before the end of the internship, I got the job. And I was hired to be a full-time strength coach as of January 2007. Now, over my time there, I inevitably just grafted, as they say here in Ireland. I worked my way up, and I just wanted to be ready that when the current person leading the NFL Combine program was to move on, which inevitably they both moved on. One moved on to the NBA, one moved on to the NFL. I was the next in line for the time I had put in. And you know, for another day, there's a story behind what was involved putting that time in and grinding, literally running 6 recovery sessions a day in a theater with no light to prove that I was willing to do anything and everything it took to support this NFL Combine development program. And so inevitably got the gig to oversee that. Now, you fast forward 8 years. How did I end up in Ireland? Basically, for me, Justin, if I'm honest, I felt I'd exhausted everything I could contribute in the context of Exos. And I felt Exos had given me everything at that time it had to offer. That's not a critique in either direction. I think naturally you get to that point where you've exhausted the resources where you were planted. And so I realized I did not want to get embittered. I wanted to leave on my own terms, on good terms. And so I knew that to challenge myself, I had to plant myself and my family in new soil. Luckily, I had a supportive wife who wanted to do the same thing. And so we looked all over the world, across different countries, different sports, and inevitably Ireland and Irish rugby had the right role, the right mix of skills that I happen to have. And it's the opportunity we took. And 6 years later now, it's one of the best decisions of my and our life. We absolutely love it here. Been a great challenge, not easy, but everything we were looking for.
That's the beautiful part of life is how things unfold. And like you said, when things in the moment, you don't realize where it's taking you like 10 steps down the road. So I think that's fantastic. And I definitely would love to have you back on to dive more specifically into into your roles at those places at Exos and stuff like that, because I think that's really important for people to hear, because I do come across a lot of especially people newer in the fitness space or starting their facilities that want to get into the athletic realm, but I don't think they really know what is involved with getting into that space where you can actually become an established place for athletes.
Yes.
So I think that's would be a very valuable topic, but another time.
Yes.
Today we're diving into the language of coaching, and like you hit on it a little bit and how that piqued your interest and like how you focused on critiquing yourself and how your delivery and everything was coming across. So I guess why exactly, because I mean, like you see different strength coaches or different coaches in general will hit on different things. Like why exactly did like the language of coaching speak to you and draw you into obviously now where you have a book on it?
Yeah. So, you know, my mom would tell you I was destined to do something with my mouth about speaking, and she just hoped it would be positive. And so I'd like to think that I haven't let her down to date. So maybe there was a little predisposition towards this. But if I go back that same time when I met Guido van Rijsegem, I met another gentleman at the same time, and he was one of the other trainers, more established, running the actual trainer education program. And I was following him. I was shadowing him like all trainers going through the program had to find one of the established trainers to do so. Very common in our industry as you're trying to learn the ropes, as they say. And so I'm taking mad notes every time I'm going through these training sessions with him. And just for a bit of background, he did quite a bit of work with amateur bodybuilders. He himself was a bit of an amateur bodybuilder, and people would come from all over the county to see him. He had quite a reputation. He had a colorful personality, didn't always rub everybody the right way, but he was passionate about what he did and does, and no one could fault him for that. And so I was shadowing him. And what was interesting is I started to notice, because I shadowed a bunch of different trainers, from a programming perspective, the X's and O's of what to coach and what to do. And I'm going to come back to that again later. He was very similar to everybody, right? Bench press on Monday. It was extra bicep and tricep work at the end. All the basic building blocks were there. There were no surprises. Now, I remember asking him, you know, much like you might ask me, well, what makes a good trainer? And he's like, you got to understand your periodization, your biomechanics, your kinesiology, your anatomy. He'd use this phrase, specific range of motion, knowing exactly the meticulous position to put people in to get the maximal activation and pump, which again was quite critical for bodybuilding and the aesthetics of the population he worked with. But as I was watching him, that I took all those notes, right? And he'd always be like, the bill's in the mail or the invoice is in the mail. And I said, that's not it. That's not what makes this guy so attractive to all of his clients. That's not this guy's X factor. And I kept listening and watching. And I noticed something, Justin, that he did that was quite unique, that I've now noticed is a hallmark of great coaches and great teachers. And that is he protected the moment before the movement. And just for the listener, I'm going to say that one more time. He protected the moment before the movement. Now, people, well, what did he protect it for?
Yeah.
He protected it for one idea. He always wanted his clients, knowingly or not, to go into battle, to go into this movement with one focused idea that was meant to help them move better, feel better, and ideally both. And he was brilliant at it. But the crazy thing is, Justin, even though he fancied his own voice, that was not what he cited when I asked him what makes him great or what makes a great trainer. Even he did not realize that one of the key separation points between him and others was how he communicated, what he said, and as I said there earlier, when he said it. I'll never forget, because again, it was kind of that 19, 20-year-old Nick. I went to see that other mentor, Guido, and I said, Guido, one day I'm going to write a book called The Form Within. And I'm like, even though I just came into contact with this idea, it was so compelling to me And so unavailable anywhere in the industry, the education, and the upbringing, I knew it was something that I needed to save for a rainy day. Now, fast forward, it took me about 6 years after that moment before that idea sprouted. And the reason it took about 6 years, and this goes back to your original question of how did I even get into this? Before you can really become passionate about how to coach, you need to first develop an understanding, a deep understanding of what to coach. And so what to coach is everything that John Curry had said to me and labeled off: biomechanics, anatomy, physiology, programming, right? FMS, screening, business, all of these pieces related to what to do. And so fast forward then those 6 years, I had accumulated that in spades. I had learned it in dog years. I had gained so much from a brilliant set of industry leading, established, proven strength coaches. Once I, if you would, had absorbed it, I don't want to say I had perfected it, but absorbed it and could execute it at a high level, I was still left wanting more. And what I realized, what I wanted was that little seedling that was planted 6 years earlier. And to put a final touch on this, it was a cold January morning. I was coaching about 15 NFL combine athletes. And I had this kind of transcendent out-of-body moment where I realized that my eyes were turned inward. I was so focused on the program, not the person, on what I was going to say, rather than actually seeing what I should say, I woke up. And I'm not turning a phrase and trying to sensationalize this. My colleagues at the time could tell you I was like a man on fire after this realization. And that realization was, I am a monologuer. I am a one-way street. And I need to start moving from monologue to dialogue. I need to see my athlete, see my client. And only then can I start to understand and appreciate how to communicate with them. And ultimately, I fell in love with this idea of learning and how people learn. But specifically, I made the decision to target communication and the role of language on learning to move.
Wow. I mean, I'm blown away with, I guess, the level of awareness that you had at 19, 20 to even think to watch somebody or observe somebody from that perspective. Because like typically, most people that age, it's like you said, purely focusing on everything that he listed and looking at things just from like the actual action that's happening, not just like what's happening behind the scenes to make that action happen type of thing. And it's that's impressive to have that level of awareness to even come to that conclusion. That, like I said, like even he himself did not even realize what he was doing. I think that's definitely a testament, I guess I would say, that you're in the right thing.
I'd hope so. And I had some great people. I that's why I like to mention my mentors, because I would not be who I am, or at least on the trajectory that I am at present, without them.
Yeah. And that always brings me to like another topic that I think is kind of like a dying thing in this space. And it's nice to hear that this was such a prevalent part of your journey, but like you said, like internship and like just learning under other people that have already established themselves in the space and have like wisdom to share. And it's like this mentality of just want to be the best without actually learning from the best. I think it's inhibiting a lot of people that could be better in their craft and what they're doing. And kind of at a loss of the word, I'm trying to think of.
Well, let me pick up the thread there, Justin. Let me, because I know exactly what you're pointing towards. And I've had many a conversation myself on this. So let me give a small anecdote to, I think, articulate in a very accurate way what you're observing. So when I started at Athletes Performance, right, got the job late 2006, and then was, you know, on the payroll in 2007. By the end of 2007, I had been working in the education department purely because I had done a bit of training education when I was in college. And I was comfortable speaking to others about training, and I had I was passionate about then as I am today. And so the gentleman I was working under, he had to go off and work on another contract that Athletes Performance had. And so now I'm 21 at the time, and I'm not saying this just to be boastful. I'm showing this to say I was in a very immature state in terms of my own development. I was very young. I was straight out of the oven, straight out of college on this. But I showed an aptitude and a desire to coach and to coach coaches. And so I'm 21 and I'm running these five-day mentorships whereby there's people in the room who have 10, 15, 20, 30 years of experience. And they are coming to get this premier high-cost education that Mark Verstegen and his leadership team have designed. Nothing else out there at the time, and even today, truly like it. And here I am, a sole guide through hundreds of years of methodology that was designed well before my time at this place. To say I was scared was an understatement. But the reviews, I mean, Anthony Renna, right? Anthony Renna's podcast, Strength Coach Podcast. He was there, I think, for my first or second mentorship I ran solo. And he thought I'd been doing this for years and years and years. And here's why I'm sharing this. Because I was a parrot, Justin, a parrot. I had absorbed and studied everything. I'd absorbed and studied my predecessor in that coach education space. And I could deliver it like an actor to the dotted I and the cross T. And that's what I was. I don't want to say I was an imposter because there was substance behind what I was saying and who I was. But at that time, I was acting. I had not earned the right to say what I was saying. Now, I was still successful at it. People were still coming back. The reviews were positive. But Mark Verstegen got wind of this. And he pulls me into his office. And he says, Nick, you've got to understand something about athletes' performance. He was the one that first said this to me. And I love this line. Here and in this industry, like it or not, we learn in dog years. And you have to remember, when you stand up there to speak, it's not Nick Winkelman. It's athletes' performance. And don't forget, athletes' performance is built on easily 100 years of cross-sectional experience across your fellow professionals working for this organization. Now, that lit me on fire, Justin, and I just skyrocketed with passion from there. But here's the reality. It took me years before, in my heart, I felt that it was my authentic voice, that I felt I could answer questions from a place of intuition, knowledge, experience, and truth. And even today, even though I have a lot of experience, I still feel, as most in an industry do who are passionate about it, that I have a lot more to learn. So what am I saying back to what you're saying? You have a lot of young individuals who are establishing themselves. And they're trying to establish themselves far quicker than time and experience allows. People always ask the question, what advice would you give to your 21-year-old self? Well, I was 21 in that story, and I've got one word: be patient. Don't try to force your success, and don't try to impose yourself on an industry before you've earned the right to do so. That's called being an imposter. And so take your time. This is a knowledge worker space, and you only can learn at the rate you can apply. And so you're limited by the nature of our capacity to absorb and our capacity to apply in a real-time experience and context. And so that's probably not the most, well, it's hopeful, but at the same time, people that want to go quick might not see it as a hopeful message. But ultimately, great things, it's cliche, but cliches are true. Great things take time, and that's certainly true in this industry.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, and that's definitely a stance that I've always taken with people too, saying the same as I think, like, you, success before you're ready for it is probably like the worst thing you can ever wish for. Like, it's
scary.
It ruins people. It ruins people.
It can, you know? Yeah.
And it ruins, I've seen it plenty of time, it ruins businesses where they think they can, like, hack the way their way through things and not have the foundation. And like what you said there is basically you're operating from a center of truth. And that allows you to then have your voice and be able to adapt to different scenarios that happen and speak from you because you have that truth that you're falling back on. And when you don't have Absolutely. That, it's, I mean, you're shaky at best. It's not going to lead to any type of like substance, like that's actually going to allow you to build a reputation or a brand off of. So I think that's such a huge, powerful message. And I'm glad we dove into that because I think that was something that definitely needed to be heard.
There's no life hack for experience. No. Let me know when they make it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And even at that, now I would question it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, kind of like, I guess like hitting on that a little bit more because I think a common mindset that we believe when we focus on like the business space and tying this to the business space, obviously a lot of gym owners or personal trainers are sold in this idea of focusing on sales and marketing and it's going to like rocket your business. And I think this applies to the same thing that it's, that's only going to take you so far. And that's a piece of the puzzle. But again, obviously, if you don't have actually your foundation set and your fulfillment isn't good or your service isn't good, everything's going to crumble type of thing. So maybe you can like just speak to that person that's still struggling with thinking that focusing on marketing and sales is always the solution and kind of letting everything else just happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and again, I'll be the first to say I am not the go-to at all. Business marketer, my self-promotion, I've been critiqued many, many times on all those facets. So I definitely won't speak to that. So I'm probably biased in the other direction of just trying to create something so unavoidably good that it sells itself in kind of a grassroots arena by chance or choice. That's my present approach with even all of my own work. But I understand where you're coming from. And I do think everything ultimately is about balance and finding balance. There's a time to market and there's a time to focus on what you're marketing, right? Mm-hmm. And here we're talking about the value of focusing on what you're marketing, because ultimately you could have the best marketing in the world, but if the device breaks, if the shoe is no good, if the service does not deliver what it is meant to, inevitably you'll be found out. And why not? Let's use the term again, you're an imposter, and people really don't like being deceived. And so especially in our space, the best way to grow a business, in my opinion, is to have an unbelievable service. And so I think this is a nice way to maybe bridge into some of my work on the language of coaching. If we were to discuss with your clients, why do you keep coming back? We know, I don't want to say we know because I don't have a reference paper here, but here's my intuition. I think I can say that. My observation is if you're a really good trainer, and what I mean by that is a good trainer is at a number of levels. If someone has a good experience with you, so let's say, Justin, you are my trainer and I have a good experience with you. What's one way we can define a good experience? I enjoy being around you. When I'm with you, I feel good. I feel positive. And just, I don't know why, I look forward to coming back. For many individuals, that can and likely will be, in many cases, disconnected from their actual results. They might come in and simply enjoy the process of talking, working out, and having a session facilitated. For some people, it's the most meaningful discussion they'll have all day. We hear about this, but I was a personal trainer for almost 10 years. I know that's the case. I have firsthand experience. And so on one hand, people just want to have a really, really good experience. On the other hand, I do think people want results. And I think now with the information age, there's more and more expectations on what those should be. And just like a doctor, we know that clients are coming in having read the flavor of the month, you know, men's health or women's health or T-Nation article and what it is. And they're pinging in with questions and ideas or why aren't we doing that? So I do believe that as a society, and in this space is no different, people are becoming more results oriented. And so I think that the key is, are you providing a great experience that ultimately helps the client achieve their results? And we know that even once they've achieved their results, they tend not to leave. In fact, they double down. They might want to work with you now 4 times a week instead of 2 or 3. And so the key thing is, what's the thing that can help really drive good experience and really drive good outcomes? Now, let's take how we opened this up around industry knowledge. A lot of our knowledge, it's undeniable. You take the CSCS NSCA textbook, it focuses on the what of coaching, right? Periodization, rep sets, exercise selection, all the various principles and the biomechanics and physiology sits under it. Critical, unbelievable. And so I can design this amazing program that's meant to help the person achieve that second part result. It might not necessarily dictate a great experience, but it could be a pathway, a blueprint to a really, really good result. But let's footnote this with a thought experiment. Justin, if I was able to clone you, make 10 Justins, but then I found 10 different trainers, completely different trainers, all had access to the same equipment, same facilities, and then I, Nick Winkelman, wrote the program. So the program was unified, Justin genetically unified. The only defining difference was 10 different coaches. Do you think we would get the exact same result across the 10 contexts?
No, I don't think so.
Not a chance. Not a chance. It's like you and I, in a very real sense, all going into the same kitchen with the same ingredients and the same recipe, and we all cook spaghetti bolognese. We're not going to make it all the same, okay? Even though everything else was the same. And so that's kind of like what programming does. Programming is only as good as the person delivering it. So programming by itself gets to good results, but doesn't necessarily dictate a good experience. So let's say, well, what else is in there then? What other ingredients are in play that can upgrade experience and outcome? Well, let's peer into what makes a good experience. I like to be around people who, right, listeners, I like to be around people who, insert here, make me feel good, make me better, make me laugh, make me feel relaxed, right? When it comes to a teacher, makes learning something easy, makes learning something fun, right? And we could go on and on and on, and people could add in their different answers in the suggestion box. And so what all of this hangs on ultimately, what is omni and ever present, is how I'm communicating with you. It is unavoidable that that is central to how that experience, ready, is experienced. Yeah. Because the primary thing that you're taking in is my words, what I'm saying, how I'm saying, the nonverbal, what I'm not saying, that sits behind the words that are coming out to you. All of this is the character. It's the paint on the canvas that ultimately defines how that experience takes form and whether or not your net outcome is, I like it, I want more, I don't like it, I want less, right? All of that can fall into what we call interpersonal communication skills. Knowing what to say, how to say it, and when to say it in terms of the preferences, experiences, and desires of the person in front of you. But there's another way that we use communication in training, isn't there? We use communication in a dominant form to speak movement. We communicate movement. Literally, there's a language that coaches speak. It is the language of movement. We use instruction, description, cueing, and feedback, all with the intention of offering up an idea to you, the client, via our words that helps you move better. And so ultimately, and we can zoom in the time we have left into specifics here, but ultimately my work, and not just my work, the work of hundreds, if not thousands of individuals, practitioners, and researchers has looked at this. And what I have found is effective cueing, instruction, feedback, the language of communicating movement when done correctly, generates a better learning experience, whereby the person says, this is a memorable session. Literally, it is a memorable session. I feel better in the session. And gosh, I feel better every time I come back. Things are actually building. I'm walking out with more than I came in with. Because what is more satisfying than a little child solving a problem? What is more satisfying than my son and daughter the first time they rode their bike over 20 yards without falling off it? We as humans are dopamine addicts when it comes to learning, gaining things. It is the intrinsic reward for which nothing else compares. And what is on offer here is a pathway in a blueprint to better communication that in the process of communicating movement leads to a better experience. If that's not important to a business owner or a coach, I don't know what is.
Wow. I mean, that is so true. Cause I didn't necessarily think about it from the same perspective that you just laid it out there, but I can think back now of like, I can remember like past the members of my facility where like they would get so pumped when they learned how to do a movement right. And that in itself would keep them coming back. And it was like their body language, the way they talk, everything shifted when they were able to click with them. I've also seen the other opposite of that. I've seen people leave because they felt foolish or frustrated or embarrassed because they couldn't do something. And it's like, it's completely laid out there, but I mean, like the way that you obviously explained it kind of like, it definitely brings it all into full picture there and putting more purpose behind it. But I think that is such a powerful thing. And especially, like you said, in this industry, in this space and what we do and how we work with people, I mean, this has to be like one of the top priorities over anything, because it is everything. It controls every part of your business, really, in your service, with how you are communicating to people. So we can take this into like a little more of a tactic approach, or kind of like make it maybe a little more real for some people. Yes. And say a coach was coming to you and you were going to be mentoring that maybe didn't have this perspective. How do you go about helping them shift their perspective to understanding what this is?
Yep. So it's a bit of a party trick. I do it on, you know, the last few podcasts, but I'm assuming your listener base might be different than others. So I think it's worthwhile to do this, a bit of a thought experiment. Okay. It's called Let's Make a Bet. So we're going to have everybody, including you, Justin, imagine that we've arrived in Vegas. Let's pick a hotel. We're at the MGM Grand, and you've walked into the MGM Grand and you see this, let's make a deal. Let's make a bet. You walk in there, have a quick peek, and you see a track set up, an MGM branded track. And they say, the bet is easy. We're going to have you run 4 sprints over 10 yards each. Okay. And we are going to ask you to think about, scratch that, 3 sprints. We don't want people to get too tired. 3 sprints. Okay. 3 sprints. People be walking out. No one wants to blow a hamstring. 3 sprints each over 10 yards. Okay. We want to see which one you run the fastest. Like, okay. Here's the catch. Each time we're going to give you something different to focus on. All right. So here's this card. You're going to look at each of these cues, each rep, you're going to think about something different. We want you to bet on the cue, the focus that's going to allow you to run the fastest 10-yard time. And if you're successful, you win the money. Okay. So you pick up the card, you have a look at it. So cue number 1, and you're kind of, as you're reading these, you're doing a little bit of mental simulation, a little bit of imagery before you actually get up there and sprint. So rep number 1, you read, okay, focus on rapidly extending your knees. So in your mind, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to get on the track in a 2 or 3 point stance, hard through the 10 yards, rapidly extending my knees. And you're thinking through this pretty hard because you got to make a bet. Yeah. You're running through that through your simulator here. You want to pick the right one. So rapidly extend your knees. Okay, then you go to the second cue. Okay, focus on rapidly pushing the ground away. Focus on rapidly pushing the ground away. So again, you imagine yourself 2 point, 3 point, rapidly every single stride pushing the ground away. Run it through your simulator. You do a bit of comparison. You're like, okay, A, B, I'm not sure. Then you get to C and you read, okay, we want you to imagine that there is a rattlesnake 1 foot behind your back leg. As you stride out, beat the bite. Beat the bite. So now you're imagining someone put a rattlesnake curled up, rattling right behind your back leg, about to snap your calf, embed its teeth, beat the bite, beat the bite. So you run it through the simulator. So the question to you is, Justin, which one do you bet on? Which one's going to allow Justin to run the fastest 10-yard time?
Well, I definitely was leaning more, like when you first said him, obviously B at first, but then once you said C, I instantly had an impulse reaction within me of like, almost like, yeah, I want to get away from that type of thing. Yeah. So that definitely triggered more of an emotional response in me than obviously the other two options. So I have to go with the rattlesnake.
Okay. And so I'm in the process of writing up a paper with a number of colleagues on that exact experiment, whereby we asked just over 100 college-aged individuals, half were athletes, half were non-athletes, men and women, to look at about 15 or 16 different movements and basically make a bet which of the cues they preferred, which of the cues they thought would be better. And over 80% of individuals had a systematic preference for either B or C options, for either what we call external cues that kind of focus you on the environment, push the ground away, or these analogies, figurative visual language, sticky memorable language that triggers an external focus. Because even though a rattlesnake isn't there, if the rattlesnake were there, it's external to your body and you're trying to move away from it, as in achieving a goal or an outcome. And those are then compared to these internal cues, where I'm thinking of extending a knee, as in our example, or squeezing a glute, or moving my leg, right? And it's internal because it's inside the body, it's body centric. And so we now know without fail, there's a consistent intuition that generates a preference for these external cues and these analogies that generate an external focus, even though it's figurative. And so these three categories, internal language, focusing on the movement of the body, external language, focusing on the outcome of what the body is trying to do in its oneness, right? First cue was just the knees. That's actually dissecting the body into the micro. I dissolve the oneness. Whereas when I say push the ground away or beat the bite, I reestablish the oneness of the body. And I allow the cue to be like a conductor that's a single entity in front of a symphony, right? An orchestra. Well, in the same way, I'm providing one cue that is meant to orchestrate a symphony of joints and muscles in its oneness, one sound in a symphony, one motion in terms of movement. And so these three categories, without question, define the categories that we use when we cue movement. It's the thing that my mentor was doing when he was protecting the moment before the movement. He was either providing some kind of internal, external, or figurative analogy, micro story, if you will. So our intuition points to these external and these analogies. Now, what if I told you this is a very old science? At present day, it's 24 years old. Since the very first study looking at internal cues versus external cues, it was about 24 years ago, 1998. First paper was published by Dr. Gabrielle Wolf. Now, certainly there's plenty of historical background research that use different names and different terminology all the way back to Williams, who, for those who are familiar with the psychological literature. But in terms of the modern context, internal, external focus and cueing, 1998, Dr. Gabrielle Wolf. And so what is interesting is as of December, 2021, a meta-analysis came out. It's like a super review of all the credible research papers over that time period. And this meta-analysis put the nail in the coffin for anyone who had any questions, showing that when you take a targeted external cue compared to a targeted internal cue, provided as a singular focus before a movement, an external cue results in better immediate performance, better retention and learning long-term, better transfer across skills. And here's the key. This is independent, meaning it is unaffected by skill type, level of experience, gender, ability, age. It is a universal, it appears to be a universal principle of how we learn to move our bodies. And just think about that. If I had to think about my elbow or my shoulder or my wrist to move. And granted, there are certain motor conditions that impact the motor system that require an internal focus. These are fringe examples with individuals who have compromised motor nervous systems. But for an individual without that condition, for which it is remarkably rare, we know that we do not need to think about our body to move our body. A child who is preverbal, they've never heard anatomy words thrown at them to move their body, is able to move and learn to move just fine. Yet for some reason, if we look at the narrative, literally what we say when we're coaching movement, another paper just came out and it looked over all the papers that actually looked at and documented what people say when they coach. There's a preferential use, Justin, of internal language. And in my own experience, when I was coming up as a coach, and in watching and working with now thousands of coaches, without fail, we speak from the biomechanical textbook. We speak from the anatomy textbook. We speak from the physiology textbook. It is codified into our language because nobody gave us an alternative. And what my book and other books like it are, it's an alternative. It's not an or, it's an and. When I'm teaching you to move, I absolutely want to be helpful to have dialogue about your body. Hey, elbow goes here, knee goes here. How's this feeling? How's that feeling? Totally normal. But Justin, I guarantee for all of your listeners, their trainers deal with this. Coach, I know what to do. I just don't know how to do it. And when we are using descriptive internal body-centric language, we are dealing with the knowledge structures of what to do. The semantic ability to describe something is not the motor ability to do it. And so when we start to study, as I've outlined here, hopefully clearly with example, is when we start to realize that we think and operate, knowingly or not, in an external world-centered focus. We are embodied on the world, we are centered on the world, and we move in terms of that world. And so that is what external focus is offering, and that is what analogy is offering. And so my work, and it has taken me literally over a decade to hopefully simplify it and articulate it at the level I can share with you today. These are so obvious in hindsight, but not when you're just coming into the industry, because nobody told you there was an alternative. There was a better way to communicate movement, but now we know. And in my book, The Language of Coaching, I outline the theory. I tell the story of the theory and the models that hopefully can now codify the right way to communicate movement, not in replacing internal language, but knowing how to harmonize it with external and analogy-derived phraseology.
Wow. I would say that you definitely broke that down very well, and it articulated in a way that was really easy to absorb and understand. And immediately, I think it would be hard for someone not to have a perspective shift even after just walking through a simple exercise as that. But you said it's all in the way that obviously I have it delivered, and to get people to shift their mindset from where they are to where they need to be. I think that was really interesting. I wasn't actually expecting like an exercise like that. But I think that was, it was so simple. It was so effective. And I think this is in general, I think this is one of those conversations for everyone listening that I think you should be replaying this and making sure that you're taking notes and really being observant in what Nick is sharing, because this is gold. I mean, like, this is stuff that's really going to take your career and your abilities to another level. So don't just listen to this and let it pass through and let it collect digital dust. Like, this is one that you want to actually listen again and be active listening and writing down what you can apply and how you're going to actually start applying it. Cause like, that's where you're going to start benefiting from conversations like this. Like, our goal is, like, as awesome as Nick is, like, we don't just hop on here, obviously, to just for the sake of talking. We want to have this serve a purpose and be able to help you, the listener, move forward in some aspect of your business and your life. So that's where then it comes on your end of the bargain now, is to actually apply what you're hearing. And Nick, as we work towards wrapping up, as I mentioned to you before, I like to just kind of like end on, maybe it could be like a lighter note, but just get your perspective. Obviously, everything that you've gone through in your journey and your insights that you've experienced, a coach or gym owner coming to you looking for support, what do you feel is a valuable thing that they need to hear?
So, okay. First of all, I love your little spiel there and the emphasis on this is just the beginning. Don't be passive. And Digital Dust. There we go. That's a podcasting external cue, Justin. I love that. I made a note of that one immediately. That is memorable as anything. Okay. That's the principle in action in a slightly different context. So here's what I'd say to answer your question or begin to give a portion of an answer to the question. You go to a comedy show and you sit there, assuming it's your type of comedy. We know it's subjective. So it's your type of comedy. Let's say it's your favorite comedian. I love Jim Gaffigan, just an example. You're laughing. You're laughing hysterically. Unavoidably, you are laughing. But just because you're laughing and you know how to identify and recognize a good joke doesn't mean you're prepared to get on a stage and deliver it. Mm. And that is what many of the listeners are going to feel like. They're going to feel like, okay, I 100% get what Nick and Justin are talking about, or I can recognize all the greatest cues I've ever given that are external versus analogy, or when I'm working with my coaches or trainers on the floor, I can hear and identify, yes, that's a really good cue. Write that one down. Or yes, that's exactly what you need to be thinking about. That's like going to the comedy show. That is very different than becoming a comedian. And what we are talking about right now is the scary but exciting opportunity to become that comedian. That's going to take work. If you've watched any of the documentaries on Seinfeld or a Jim Gaffigan or a Chris Rock, these individuals are students of their craft. They are going to these dive bar comedy clubs, trying jokes. And they'll tell you for everyone that lands, they've got a mountain of ones that have failed. That is absolutely one-to-one a proxy for coaching cues and trying to understand, read a room, understand the individual, and come up with phrasing that actually is going to make a difference. Now, certainly there isn't as much pressure as a comedian, but you can impose that pressure on yourself. And that pressure should be clear. If they're not getting better, the words aren't working. And so we need to put systems in place that are simple as anything that allow us to systematically upgrade how we coach alongside what is already in place, the systematic upgrading of what we coach. So you ask for the listener, especially the business owner, what's the first thing to do? Listen to this podcast. Have a discussion. What do we think? Where is the relevance? Ask questions. How are you getting better at how to coach? How are you reflecting on the act of coach when you are coaching? Are you just planning the exercise, the rep, and the set? Or have you added a new column? Is it time that we add a new column to the program? A column for cues and not just static pre-print run-of-the-mill on a loop cues. No, curated and created cues for that individual that you are constantly reflecting and updating and making a note on. So there is a red thread in how you're engaging with them over time. Now, I always hate the shameless plug, but I wrote my book because it hadn't been written. And so the key thing is I offer to novel models that provide the blueprint for the anatomy of analogy and the anatomy of an external cue. And these two models then can be the source of internal discussion and education. I facilitate sessions all around the world now, digitally more often than not, with all sorts of sports, utilizing these models as a blueprint to help them unpack and understand their sport in terms of this way of communicating it. But it starts with what we started this conversation on, raising our awareness, asking some really simple questions. And if people say, Nick, what should we do next? Simple. I want you to simply notice what you say, when you say it, how you say it, and look for its echo in your client's face, body language, and movement. Notice it from a bird's eye perspective, without judgment, without an attempt to change it. Just notice it. And I guarantee if you do that wholeheartedly, you will be able to find the path to progress as I did. Because Justin, here's the key. When I started, that's all I had.
Love that. That's such a, that's a powerful way to end up, wrap up this conversation. And I think that's a very actionable thing for people to take away from this conversation of how they listen, what they take from what they just listened, and like, okay, what do I do from here? And how do I start applying this into my daily practice? And so I think that was an excellent way to sum that up and wrap up this conversation. Now, I do want to make sure people know where to grab this book, because I think this is going to be like the next piece, obviously, to helping, like you said, learn on a deeper level, obviously, than what we went into this conversation, and then how to even apply it more. So where's the best place for them to be able to get access to this book?
Yep. So the full title is The Language of Coaching, The Art and Science of Teaching Movement. It's on all the various Amazon sites. It's on Human Kinetics website. They are the publisher. And if people want plenty of other free resources on this, I did an entire book club, and I have probably 5 or 6 different lectures at various time points that are all anchored. So thelanguageofcoaching.com. People want to get in touch with me, it's info@thelanguageofcoaching.com. And the fresh brain ideas are at Nick Winkleman.
Excellent. And I hope you guys listening to this, do take advantage and invest in yourself, invest in your career, invest in your clients, and grab yourself this book. And then also, if you have further questions on this and want to reach out to Nick, do it. Like, that's how things open up. That's how opportunities are created, when you just step a little bit outside your comfort zone and put yourself out there and see what happens. I mean, like, it's nothing's going to happen if you don't do anything. So I encourage you to do both of those actions, reach out to Nick and grab a copy of The Language of Coaching, to really advance your career and advance your skill set, because it's such a vital skill set to what we do, and it's a craft. And this is something that you have to learn. So thank you again, Nick, for your time. Thank you for everything that you're doing in the industry, to really shape it and put your stamp on it, and to really help people evolve themselves. So we really appreciate everything that you're doing.
Well, I appreciate, Justin. I appreciate individuals like you giving a platform for these ideas. So thank you.
It's really our pleasure. And we're happy to give a platform to obviously people like yourself that are so dedicated to their craft and in this space. It's one of the things that I think that makes the fitness industry in a whole is so unique, is it is filled with a lot of passionate people that are doing this from that perspective. And lastly, we just want to obviously thank you, the listener, because obviously we wouldn't have a show if you weren't listening. So we definitely appreciate that. And we're happy that you're always looking for ways and resources to improve yourself and your business. It's such a vital thing to be doing on your journey. And like I mentioned before, now let's make sure that we're taking what we learned and listened to and applying it. With that being said, I look forward to having you join us on the next episode of the Fitness Business Freedom Show. Thank you so much and take care.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode on the Fitness Business Freedom Show. On behalf of Fitness Revolution and myself, we are thrilled you are looking for ways and resources to move your business forward, and we are honored to be that source for you. If you would like to receive more business building support from us, be sure to head over to the show notes and join our subscriber list and stay on top of all the industry insights that matter most to you. Now, before I close out today's show, if you found this episode beneficial in any way, I just ask you to leave us a simple review to help other gym owners find us and discover this show. Thank you so much, and I will see you on the next episode of the Fitness Business Freedom Show.